That's how we own it.
What's up, y'all? This is Tamika Mallory.
And I'm Ison Lennon, and this is Street Politicians.
Street Politicians makes me super excited. It's been a long time coming that we've been working on this podcast. You know, I know for me, there's a lot of information out in the world, a lot of stuff coming at us, a lot of ways to get information, a lot of ways to give your opinion on that information. But I find often that people don't necessarily understand everything that they're consuming. And I think this space gives us an opportunity to really deconstruct and, you know, dissect some of the things that we see happening in pop culture and hip hop culture. You know, in entertainment and business, of course, we're talking about money, right? Economic empowerment, community engagement, criminal justice. There's so much happening, politics, and we just want to be able to break it down. And I think street politicians in itself embodies exactly what we mean. We do the work on behalf of our people. You have to be, folks are like, I'm not political. If you live every day in this society, you're political. You're living a political life. But we want to be able to bring information to you in the street.
You know, I think us being actually being in the movement, on the front lines of this movement, we see things from a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And us definitely having connections to the streets, to the hip-hop community, to pop culture, and being able to infuse all of those things at once gives us a different, a unique point of view that's not really out there right now. You know, there's a lot of information out there, and a lot of people don't know how to get it all. You know, they don't know how to digest it all. They don't know how to break it down. I think that we come from a unique perspective because we know how to throw on some constructions, and then we go on to the boardrooms, and then we're on the front lines of the movement, and we can give you all of these perspectives at the same time and pretty much bridge that gap between the culture and explain why politics are important for our communities. Because a lot of people in our communities don't believe that they should be involved in politics. Yeah.
But the podcast is not just about politics.
We're going to have fun.
Because even your fun is political.
Sports, everything. And that brings me to something I was just thinking about that happened a few weeks ago in the news. And it was about when the NBA players went to China. I don't know if you paid attention.
Yeah, I sure didn't. So, you know, I'm sports dead.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
And you always have to help us understand. So what happened? Because LeBron, something was going on with LeBron.
LeBron was the person who was asked to speak on behalf of it. But it was the China did some expedition where the NBA players went over to China. And they were supposed to do a lot of press day. They were supposed to do a lot of things because there was some type of merger with the NBA in China. And then you know the protests that were happening over there.
Of course.
And one of...
See, I pay attention to that.
And one of the... Let me get this exactly right, because it was one of the executives in the NBA when LeBron got back. Yeah, look it up. Look it up.
Let me see what he said. Who was it? Daryl Morey is his name.
Yes.
After his tweet supporting Hong Kong's protesters, the Houston Rockets general manager was the subject of a pro-China campaign. A selection of tweets at Daryl Morey, many of which contains NMSL, y'all probably know what that is and I don't, which loosely translates to your mother is dead. Dang. So then what did LeBron say?
So what happened was at that point, LeBron's statement, the executive wasn't knowledgeable about what was going on. You know, and what they were saying was that LeBron is one of the outspoken athletes. He utilizes his platform to speak against all kinds of injustice.
Right. I mean, even we were able to get LeBron to wear the I Can't Breathe t-shirts for Justice League's protest during the Eric Garner protest.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, he's been really, really supportive of the movement.
He's been supportive of the movement, and people felt that in some ways it was hypocrisy because you can't say that it's okay for you to be vocal about issues that affect you, that you are passionate about, and then go against someone who has different views on another subject, but they're passionate about those because it doesn't fit with you, you know, or because it, you know, the result of it ended up in something that probably negatively affects you.
Mm-hmm.
So I understood both point of view, and then when LeBron, when he talked about it again, he said he wasn't saying that he was wrong, or that he wasn't informed about the issues that were going on in China, but he was saying that he wasn't informed about what they had to deal with while they were over. He didn't think it made sense for him to speak about that while they were on the soil, and they had to deal with the negative effects. So, in that regard, that's what I'm trying to tell you. Like, there is politics and everything. These are guys that went over there to play basketball. They went over there.
So he's saying you should have waited to say that until we came back.
Exactly, but that's what I'm trying to tell you. That's why when people, a lot of those athletes over there, with the exception of LeBron, are not really even into politics. They don't comment on politics.
But the problem with that, where I take issue, and of course I didn't read it and I don't know all the details, but I do know that every time is a good time to say what's right, number one. And then the second thing is that if the gentleman had waited, the owner had waited until they came back, it wouldn't have been a news story. The purpose of him saying it while they were going was so that he could get the type of attention. And I'm sure that the protesters, the people in the street, they appreciated that he spoke up on their behalf. So, you know, like you said, it's a catch-22 situation, but also, which we deal with all the time in our movement spaces, it's like before you actually say something that impacts my life, we may need to have a conversation about how this is going to play out. And we argue about this all the time.
But that's where it is. What is it that you're trying to do? Are we championing? Are we promoting that people should be outspoken about issues that affect them when they feel that they need to talk about it? Or are we saying that there has to be a certain time that you talk about it? Or do I have to say it in a way that makes people comfortable? Because I don't think change comes from comfortability. I don't think me saying something that's politically correct that makes you feel comfortable about me saying I don't like it is really going to do anything to spark change.
It's about balance, and it's also understanding who's the ultimate enemy, right? And then how are people who are caught up in the mix of it going to feel about what it is that you're saying when, in fact, they want to be on your side. They want to be with you. And so if you're making comments that ultimately marginalize them or make them feel a certain type of way, you have to be thoughtful. Like, we all have to be thoughtful about how we enter, certain conversations, or, you know, what our discourse is like around different people's issues. We need time as leaders to be able to process what it is that we're saying. And again, who are all the beneficiaries and or people who will be hurt by whatever we're saying? I worked for a very powerful civil rights leader for a long time. And one of the things that I know is that before making decisions, even if his gut instinct led him back to his original thought, his kitchen cabinet, when he would go to come to some of us and throw around different ideas about a topic that he wanted to address, only helped to develop his point. It only helped him to be able to see the perspective of everybody that's in the room. So if he's going to talk about LGBTQ issues, before you speak on it, you might need to educate yourself from someone who is actually in that community. So that, I think
that's a no-brainer. I think that if you speak about people or issues that don't directly pertain to yourself, or that you're not directly impacted by or direct member of the community that you're speaking of, then you definitely should have an outlet. But if there are issues, like we have a lot of time, when there are issues that directly affect men, directly affect heterosexual men.
I was getting ready to say something. I'm so glad you started it, so I could talk about the male ego and the dangers of it.
Yeah. But bottom line is, if there are issues that affect men, and I believe that I'm a man.
You believe?
You know, I'm almost 100% sure of it, that I'm a man in every essence and regard of the word. So when there are issues that, you know, regard me, and you know, then I think that I should be able to speak freely on a man's behalf.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you shouldn't, but I do think that you have to also decide. I mean, we all, when we use social media, which is a place that attracts a lot of negativity, trolling, fake accounts and all of that, we have to decide what's the best forum to get our message across. Because if we take something to social media that in our hearts, minds, and you know, in our soul, we think we're saying the right thing, we're talking to a particular audience, but yet it's in the context of things that have been, that folks have been being dragged about, and they actually, their careers and other things have been impacted by these things, you have to actually be thoughtful, careful, and the way in which you say stuff. I mean, we get into this all the time. It's like, how you approach the internet is very, very, very serious. And sometimes the best thing to do is not to approach it at all. Because, you know, the thing I told Tariq, my son, is that everything you're thinking does not need to go online. And that's something that it took me a while to figure out. Sometimes I'll be ready to go in people's comments and say all types of things. And then one day I noticed that media outlets were picking up what I said in folks' comments. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, they're actually watching me. So I need to be careful.
You know, that brings me to a topic about comedy. A lot of people say that I'm too hard. You're obsessed. You keep talking about Kanye, and you just need to leave it alone. And I think that people don't understand the moment. That we don't understand that, you know, that the media is very powerful. That the media controls. It's like it controls our minds. It controls how we walk, how we talk, how we dress, what we think. And if somebody's constantly using platforms with millions of people following them to give you rhetoric that is detrimental to our society constantly.
Well, they don't think that's the problem. They don't think it's detrimental. No, but his rhetoric in some ways is correct, just like Candace Owens. Some of the things that Kanye is saying is important. You know, we got to stop voting Democrat all the way down the ballot because that's not working for us. Now he's talking about industry and bringing...
No, that's not what
bringing.
He's doing. See, if he was just...
I know, no, no. Okay. I'm just saying... He's talking about bringing factories and, you know, sort of agriculture, if you will, an idea about that to the U.S. All those things are important. What you're saying is that it's embedded in language or in a particular idea that is problematic for our community. And in fact, what he doesn't even know, maybe he does know, is that it's really being... it is being shared with us through the lens of white supremacy, which is even more dangerous.
But that is my whole point, is that he doesn't, because he was very aware. He understood that Bush didn't like black people. He was very aware. He's always been adamant about racism in this country prior to the last couple of years. He's been very vocal in understanding the things that's going on in this culture. When he went into Sway and he was talking about, you don't have the answer, Sway, his whole position was that there. The white supremacy in itself does not allow him to reach past a certain ceiling. That he can't be Walt Disney. He can't be Steve Jobs because they won't allow him. That he's created all of these things. He's the mind behind all these things. But there are certain things, elements within this country would not allow him to get past certain roadblocks. He's very aware of that.
Right. Well,
so
Well,
let me explain to you. So what he's utilized now is said, I can't beat him, so I'm going to join him. Mm. So... For his financial gain, he's decided to sacrifice our culture. He's decided to tell us lies about the Republican Party was the ones who did this. Not telling the truth about this is not the same Republican Party that he speaks of. That the Abraham Lincoln was not the person who freed the slaves. That the Republican Party then was the anti-slavery party that changed to the Democratic. Those are not conversations that he's having. He's saying, don't vote for Democrats. What they've been doing for you. Republicans, I can love Trump. I don't care if he's racist. I've never made a decision based on just being black. When you make these, when you start making these statements and you start saying that in front of black people who follow you, who believe that you were for our liberation and for our culture, and then you start to intentionally lie to them because you want to benefit, I cannot just sit by and say, okay, I'm just going to let Kanye do his thing. I'm going to let him say this to millions of people every day, and everybody else is just going to go along. He decide we're going to do Sunday service today because now I know y'all into the church. I know I can sell the church whenever. When y'all said I'm not invited to the picnic no more, I can do Sunday service, and everybody's going to come because they're going to see Kanye trying to get God in his life. And now I can sell an album called Jesus is King. But last week, it was, I'm a sick fuck, I like my dicks up. You know, so... When I understand the reality of that, I'm not going to be silent. I'm not going to say, you know what? I'm just going to fall back and let somebody else, because nobody else is going to talk about it. I'm not going to allow.
Well, people are talking.
They're not talking about it.
But, okay. They're not. Well, no, they're people really have not. Been talking about it.
People have just.
But
They shrug it off and say, oh, that's just Kanye. Just leave him alone.
Yeah, no, but you are 100% right about one thing. That the system that is uplifting Kanye knows that black people love spiritual music, you know, church, God, Jesus, the whole, that narrative that we follow. And certainly I believe in, love, and am a devout follower of Jesus Christ, right? So that's, so I agree with him in that perspective that we need Jesus in our lives. The problem is I don't think we're following the same God. There's something wrong with the God that he has come into contact with, because it has not.
Well,
exactly. And so he, but see that, right. And that's two different gods, because the ones that our people were singing about in the fields was a liberating God. It was a God that understood that at times we might have to actually strike our master down in order to get free. The God that Kanye is singing about is the God of oppression. Is the God that says that the massa, well, it's the God of capitalism.
As long as you have money, we don't even have to worry about the rest of the things. We don't have to worry about the people that are being at the border. We don't have to worry about the racism that our president is evoking within this country, the division. We don't got to worry about that. He's taught us how to get some money. So let's figure out how to get money and fuck everything else.
Yeah, I mean,
it's true. That's something that my soul personally,
it can't rest.
I cannot sit there and just be like, you know what? Nobody else is going to talk. Everybody's going to laugh about it.
But we also have to remember, you know, how sick our people are. There are a lot of sick people in our communities that really don't understand nuance. They really don't, have not done the research. And that's not our fault. Like, we weren't taught, and we were in many ways blocked from the knowledge that we need in order to understand all of what's happening around us, right? And so we're sick people that we have a quest for knowledge, but it has not been provided in the ways in which it should. So if you don't understand your history, then you are it's really impossible for you to be able to understand all the elements of what's happening around you, especially to your point, the media, every minute it's coming with something new and you're trying to follow, but you do know Jesus walks. You know that. You know all the good gospel songs, you know those. And so if it's coming through a musical genius, then it sounds right, especially when we want to say, I'm not political. So it's, and this is very political, what Kanye is doing. It's really dangerous. But I think in terms of a different perspective around what you're saying, that you have to be able to challenge Kanye, because he is directly, he is a direct influence for our people that is very, very damaging. Yeah, what he's
like,
doing right
like
now is
needle,
very damaging.
It's like a needle to the vein.
It is.
You're taking a little drink, and he's putting it straight to your vein.
But listen, but this might change the topic a little bit, but I think it's important. This is my thought process on what you see in terms of people saying you're too hard on Kanye, or, you know, why are you so obsessed? I think the issue is, and we talk about this all the time, sometimes I think for you, because of the fact that there's so much shit, bullshit that's going on in our society, where you kind of feel like you have to be a voice to try to check different things that's happening so that your followers and other people will have a different voice that shows them either we'll say it's the right way or a different way that's probably better for our communities. You find yourself in that all the time because of the fact that you are constantly having to engage in these conversations, it seems to some folks, and sometimes to me as well, that you have become critical all the time of too many different people. And I think what you have to do, which we've been discussing, is pick your battles. Sometimes we should go out and challenge different things, but sometimes we might have to actually miss some shit, right? Because people, for me, they say, okay, you're angry. Because I feel like every speech that I used to make, I was yelling and screaming at the world. And eventually I had to figure out that sometimes that tone was not necessary, nor was it winning our people over. So I just think, and especially if you...
But I don't agree, though.
Okay. I know that.
I don't agree with you say that tone wasn't winning our people over. I believe that yelling that you call, quote unquote, yelling, is what galvanized millions of people and made people feel like they had somebody that spoke on behalf of them. I think the people that pussyfoot around and they say the politically correct, and they say, I don't want to yell because I don't want to seem unruly, and I don't want to come across as an angry black person, they don't have military that goes against my moral compass, that my people follow me for that reason.
Yeah, but there's, but balance is key.
But I don't know.
Balance
what
is key.
Is balance?
Balance is that there should not, I don't believe that you should participate in 4 or 5 days of dialogue back and forth about an issue with whomever it is, or every time they pop up in the news, there's a response. And then on top of that, in the comments, going back and forth, arguing with every troll that comes along.
I don't want to argue with trolls, but I think that what Malcolm X said, that he who controls the news controls the people. Mm-hmm. So if they continue to put out news that is lying every day, it's directly lying. When you start trying
damaging,
to,
but
lying is damaging. But you're not telling the truth about what's going on. Somebody is able to create a narrative and point it into your brain. It becomes factual to you when it's not actually factual. Then that's a problem. Mm. So I'm not going to allow that on my mind. So I'm going to be the person that jumps up.
Yeah, well, no. You got to think about that. We're not going to just let this go. Like, well, sorry. Listen, I'll be back to discuss this again. Anyway, so I guess that brings us to the last topic, which is really important to me. It's really near and dear to me, and I've been struggling so much with this Harriet film, and not just the film, but just the moment that we're in and how Harriet, the film, seems to be sitting in the middle of the complicated, sort of complex nature of just like the push and pull of this moment. And I feel like we saw the film until Freedom Our Organization did a screening, not a screening, but we hosted folks going to Magic Johnson Theater in Harlem. I thought it was incredible. Now, their film, a friend of ours who went said that the acting was poor. Perhaps if you're a filmmaker, you may see different things, but in terms of me, the naked eye, just someone who likes to be entertained and also like education and information, I thought Harriet was great. Do I think it was perfect and that every single character actually existed and that the story was told 100% to what happened in her life? No. And I also think that the only person that could have informed them on how to be exact and accurate would have been the person who's dead, and that's Harriet Tubman.
This, for me, was the first time that I watched a black woman really portrayed as a hero. Like, for me, like, I've watched a lot of different movies where they were inside or they supported the supporting cast.
That doesn't mean it's not there.
I'm not saying it's not there. I'm saying this was the first time that I watched a black woman portrayed as a superhero in my... And there, she was not the sidekick to the man. She was her own superhero. She galvanized strength from within her that other men didn't even have. And this was something that was uplifting.
Well, see, but that's one of the things that we've heard is that men were not properly...
But that's what I want to bring us to. And I'm not going to cut you.
No, I cut you off.
But I want to bring us to that. If you look, two of our most biggest liberators throughout that history, that term, and, you know, her, and you look at that, and you see the controversy behind both of these. When you look at how the liberation movies that put us in position where we were liberated got the most flack. What they found everything bad out about the people who played the roles, who directed the roles. They figured out everything wrong with those.
And some of it was accurate.
And not saying that they weren't accurate, but I'm just trying to tell you that for years we watched 12 Years a Slave. We watched we seen all of these movies that didn't have the same content, that didn't, you know, uplift us and make us liberate. And nobody found anything wrong with them. But we constantly dissected and picked apart this. And then what happened with both of these movies, divided black men and black. Because if you look at
The Nat Turner
story,
right.
The black women were out.
Well, right, because
and they had
exactly,
a reason to be. And I was not
sexual assault issue.
The sexual assault issue was
very,
thing,
very
and
real.
Then they pointed out the rape never actually happened within history, and that's something.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's be careful because we're talking about two different things.
No. We're talking about
the issue of Nat Turner, his story, Nat Turner, and the woman. No, Nate.
That,
Nate Parker. Nate,
no,
yeah.
No,
what's his name?
No,
I'm
about,
saying that. I know what you're saying.
You
want
to clarify.
I'm just saying because people
I'm
will
talking
say,
about
oh,
in
you're
the
saying
movie
that
the
happen.
Rape didn't happen
right.
within
okay.
the movie. The Gabrielle right. Union, the part, the role she played when she was raped and her husband had to sit there, that was an accurate part of history. That you can't go throughout history anywhere and see that.
That happened during that
during
term.
During that tournament. That, right. that within right. that week. Saying it could it definitely happened throughout slavery
exactly.
time. It definitely
same thing as black
same
slave
thing
catchers.
It's black slave catchers. Mm-hmm. So they pointed those things out just like they pointed out the bounty hunter within you know, within Harry. So they said
there are so many inaccuracies in terms of, you know, what actually happened during in her story. And what we're saying is that first of all, this is not a documentary.
That's
it is a movie. It is not an autobiography. It is a movie. And it is based upon her story. And so I think that the illustrations in the film were there to bring forth some of the challenges that we face at that time and today. So the black slave catcher, maybe he didn't have a gun. His name definitely wasn't big or long, and he certainly wasn't running around just living in the wild without being checked by his own slave master, even if he was free. There still was a hierarchy, if you will, and he certainly wasn't at the top of it, right? But I think introducing him in the film gives you an example of how black people were working with the slave master
just like in that
to help try
that's
to catch
how he got
exactly
killed. Somebody turned on him.
Exactly
one
to
of
try,
our own.
To try to catch the black Moses being a Harriet Tubman. And I, again, it applies to today because we work with black slave catchers all the time. People who were supposed to be a part of the movement and in fact they're seeking us out on behalf of the oppressor and willing to turn us over. So you know, you could be literal. You can be literal as you want, with especially if it's a documentary, let's be literal. But this was a movie that had the ability to give us messages that we need to pass down to our children. So a kid that is sitting there watching this film at 9 to 10 years old, who sees the black slave catcher, has the ability to say, I don't want to be that. I never want to be the person that turns against my own people. That to me was the point of it. And by the way, because people said there was no such thing as black slave catchers at that time. And someone on my social media page, which I thought was funny, was quoting that the Harvard Press said there was no such thing as black slave catchers. Yet the University of Alabama, the chair of their history department says, not necessarily in the South, but definitely as it got closer to the North where more people were free, there were black slave catchers. And I just think that I choose to believe the University of Alabama.
I choose to believe, but I just, what I wanted to just point out was how it's divided black men.
Right.
Like we are at a very crucial time where we don't have the ability, we don't have the luxury to be divided. Especially about people that we know throughout history that what Nat Turner meant to this liberation. We know what Harriet Tubman meant to liberation. So for us to allow specific or small parts of things to completely erase them, their moment in history, their moment where the children can be introduced to their legacy, to even do more research, because now we understand that with these movies, they say, well, I want to learn about her. But we studied Wakanda. Wakanda don't exist. You know what I'm saying? There's no
that's
historical
powerful.
Reference for Wakanda. We can't go look up Wakanda. These kids can't say, wow, that actually happened. So when we have real
and
life.
And
when
we went in droves.
We went to droves that was completely untrue. That
right.
had all type of things that never could happen, never will happen. But
you
we,
mean to tell me we can't fly from one mountain
no,
to the other?
No, we can't
and
heal you with. With, what's
well, I don't
what's
know
the,
what
the,
they had. I mean, I love
vibranium. We ain't got no vibranium. None of that exists. But we went out in droves for that. But we know that Black Moses existed. We know that Nat Turner existed. We know what they gave their lives for this liberation that we are able to enjoy right now. So I just think that black men and black women, we got to come to some round table or something. Because I see where the problem is, and I'm not saying that both sides have legitimate issues.
Exactly, because
we
can't ignore the issues that people had.
For Harriet Tubman to be seen as a superhero was bigger than me saying that Bigelow. It just for me. It
oh,
was
and by it the way, there's bigger. So many lies out there. People are talking about a white savior. I'm wondering if we were watching the same movie.
Well, what I've got from people was that from some people's and perspective is really a thing.
Right.
Because your perspective.
That's one of our show topics. About nuance and perspective.
Because if you go in with a perspective that you want to see something wrong, you can find something wrong. So people did, for me, when I looked for the white slave owner who was her slave owner,
he never existed.
But to me, he was probably one of the most diabolical white men that I've ever seen. I didn't see anything as a savior. I seen when he killed Bigelow,
right.
Because Bigelow was about to shoot her. I seen him as, no, you're not going to kill her because you're not even worthy. I want to take her back. I want to torture her.
And take her to my white mother.
I want to take her back to my white mother. I want to take her
evil.
And burn her in front of the town. I want her, because he told her when she pulled out a gun, he said, they're going to tar and feather you. They're going to burn you. They're going to rip you limb from limb. So this was his goal. He didn't want, no, you ain't going to just kill her because you a nigga too. I don't want you to get that
right.
From
well,
me.
That's
you're
the
not going to take that.
The point is he was showing, by him killing Bigelow, it was to
power.
Show you how you're disposable.
All
like,
of you
I'm not going to save you.
He told
you.
Her
you
she was a
homie.
Pig. He said, my father told me that you was like a pig. That eventually you have to sell it or you got
to
eat it.
I think this is spoilers because people need to go
okay.
See the movie.
Well,
but bottom line is, to me,
it wasn't
dude
no
was
white
not
savior.
A white
it
savior.
Wasn't
he
white
killed
savior.
Her. He killed this man because he probably was always going to kill him, and he wanted to take her back and do unfathomable things. And let me just say, when she talks about life or what she talked about, freedom or death, to me, Bigelow, if the storyline was that. That she was captured and that her slave master was actually able to take her back, she probably would have preferred being killed by Bigelow, because I would definitely not want to go back with him. So for him to shoot her would have probably been fine. But anyway.
Hey.
Don't make me start crying.
Love me.
Look at
oh, yeah,
this.
Oh, yeah, we definitely going to have
listen,
you on the show.
Listen, now you got that beautiful hair. Look good, sis. Look, we're so excited to listen. This is our first Free Politicians episode. We're doing a podcast that sort of breaks down all the things in a way that everyday folks can understand. You know, sometimes I listen to the news and read stuff and I'm like,
don't you got a new show?
Happy to have Salt in the building.
Yeah.
We must. That's all right. Education. Bye. We love
you.
Thanks for coming in.
So listen, that concludes our first episode.
Y'all call her Salt. I call her Cheryl. That's
Cheryl.
My sis.
Yes.
Thorough.
Yes. Iconic.
Yep.
So we have a lot of icons for you. We have people that agree with us. People that don't agree. We have all type of information for you. All type of guests. We hope that you enjoyed our first episode. Leave a comment. Follow us on our social media. I'm Mike Son, NY General on Instagram. That's the main thing. Follow our YouTube channel, subscribe, leave comments. If you don't agree with me, if you don't like me, write all of that.
You,
I listen. No, I might respond
if
back.
If don't like you, yeah,
yeah
that's
please.
What we're trying to stop, is you responding
but
back.
You
but
can't
I
only respond to
Tamika
people who like you.
D. Mallory on all social media platforms, and I do kind of respond to a lot of things.
Yeah.
But really, we want to hear your feedback. And if you have show topics, drop them right now. Let us know what you want to hear about. We're going to be on this journey together. We want any type of information you want. Even if we don't know, we'll learn together. We might not have the right words, the right lexicon, the right, you know, edumacation and all of that.
We might not always be right. You might not always agree with us. We might not always agree with you. We might not know exactly the right thing to say. But we will always be. That's how we own it!